Hello, witches. This is Kara Kovacs, and this is Business Witch. As a third-generation witch, at least, and a business and life coach for mission-driven entrepreneurs and leaders, I teach you how to make money and magic as liberatory practices. Because when we know, seek, and embrace our full potential, we create a better world for everyone. Here you'll find tools, conversations, spells, and inspiration that take you from waiting to creating so you can build the business and life you're oh so worthy and capable of having. Let's go. Hello, sweet friend. Before we dive into this week's episode content, I wanted to make sure that you had the best and most up-to-date information about how to become a more active participant in this community. My business would not exist without incredible people like you. And so my hope is that all of the information that I put out, whether it's on socials, on the podcast, or my favorite way to stay in touch via my email list, helps you to take the steps that you need to create all the results that you want to create in your business so that we can co-create a better world. You can head to www.karakovacs.com and subscribe to my email list. You'll see a pop-up for a quiz that will give you the next best step for your business, dependent on where you're at and what you most need to focus on right now. And there's also a whole library of free resources, a mini course that'll help you start thinking about your business like a business instead of your own personal existential crisis. And once you're subscribed, you'll get weekly love letters from me that I hope give you exactly what you need to take action in a way that feels mission-driven, value-aligned, and expansive for you. So make sure you're subscribed and stay in touch. I love being connected to you. Hello, witches. Lovely to be here with you again on another episode of Business Witch. Today, we have a very special guest, and it's exciting because I was introduced to her through watching her do a TED Talk that really hit home for me. So I'm sure we'll talk about that today. She is a somatic healing practitioner, and it is my pleasure to welcome Mina Chi. Did I say that correctly?
You didn't, but
You just said it to me.
I'll say two things. One, my name is Meenakshi. It's really lovely to meet everybody who's listening. I recently heard Bio Akomolafe on a podcast. And Bio, one of the things he talks about was about like the discovery and the wonder that you can find in your name when people don't know how to pronounce it. It's almost like a reintroduction to yourself. And that was like a really beautiful reframing for me because obviously I have a name that like non-South Asians frequently don't know how to pronounce. So that's been a really, it's a fun, playful word here.
I feel like there's like a dyslexia thing for me about this because there was a girl I went to high school with whose name was Hannah. And I called her Hannah all through high school and she like hated me and I didn't know. So there's like I have a block about it. But you would think, you know, hosting a podcast, writing it down, you saying it to me 30 seconds ago, I would have. It's fine. We're still here. Everything's fine. Tell the people about the work you do in the world.
There's two things that I do. I basically help people have a better relationship with whatever it is that you want to have a good relationship with. You want to have a better relationship with yourself. You want to have a better relationship with your family members, your friends, your colleagues, your bosses. You want to have a better relationship with your lineage, your trauma, all of these things. And the two modalities that I work with are I teach nonviolent communication with the particular decolonial trauma-informed lens. And then I also do family constellation therapy, which is this magical form of somatic ancestral healing.
You know, I've never actually had constellation therapy done, but I've met so many people who do it. For people who have never heard of it before, maybe you could just give a little bit of a background.
I always say it's a little bit like trying to describe the ocean to someone who's only ever taken a bath before. It's water and water, somatic therapy, whatever. But like, yo, the shit hits. It's like most of us know that like hurt people, that the things we've been through are not actually about us. But our body doesn't know that. Like we internalize everything. We make everything about us and our bodies are carrying so much gunk from all the stuff that's been handed down. Constellation work was the first modality I experienced that really goes into the nervous system, gives you a bird's eye view of like, how did all this trauma get passed around anyways? And then like understanding I'm like one piece in the puzzle I'm a beautiful piece and all that shit isn't mine to like carry anymore.
Beautiful. And I think what my first response was when I heard you say it is thinking about how people, when I work with in business coaching, they can intellectualize that something is true, like I'm worthy of success and the work that I do is important, but that the embodied reality of actually vulnerably selling it or launching it or receiving a result that you didn't want or a lack of response from somebody that you know, had a conversation with and then they ghosted or whatever, that there is this feeling in the body and that the majority of the people that I work with think that the way to heal that is to never somehow heal never having that feeling ever again. Like, how do I like eliminate the discomfort that is the natural byproduct of being in an uncomfortable situation? And so I'm curious from your expertise, what you might offer people around that.
Well, first, I really like the way you articulate that, the like natural byproduct of being in an uncomfortable or traumatic situation is to have all these feelings. And I think when I think about or talk about or share healing work, it's not this idea that like I'm going to get to this point or that you're going to get to this point and then never feel those things again, right? Those things are going to come in waves. Like I recently had a client apply for my healing money trauma program. And one of the things she put on her application form was like, I want to feel free forever. I said, like all of my business coaches are like seven figure Black and brown women. And I'm like, I promise you the trauma will resurge. Like every financial up level you have, some gunk, some shit will come up. So I think about healing a lot more as the ability to get back up again. Maybe last time it took me 7 days to be able to have a shower again. But like this time when it hits, I'm brushing my teeth the day after, you know? So it's just that ability to hold perspective and to rebound sooner than we historically have been able to.
I think too, there's something in there about like, Do you actually, and I'm speaking to everyone, want to live a life where you no longer ever experience negative emotions?
Okay. I can feel the part of my body that's like, yes. Yes, that is correct. But like, you know, we need different flavors on the cake. We need the frosting, the nuts, the grape. Like, all the bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like, you know, the wound is what lets the light in. Like the things that have happened to me that have been the most painful or scary are the origin points of my deepest empathy. They're actually like why I teach my work the way that I teach about it. They're the reason that I'm stronger than I was 10 years ago. And so like, no, I did not enjoy experiencing them. It wasn't fun, but I think of it like a growing pain more than like a wound that doesn't go away.
I think that's beautiful.
Thank you. So you wrote a book. Tell us about your book.
Yeah, Decolonizing Nonviolent Communication. It was an accident. Like a lot of times people ask, like, how did, I'm like, I don't know, dude. Like I had studied nonviolent communication for a long time. And I had a very beautiful entry point, which was that the person who introduced me to NVC, which is the acronym for nonviolent communication, we share a home country. And so I also, so I got to experience nonviolent communication in a culturally relevant context by going back home and like working with her and with our people, et cetera. But there was always like weirdness with it. And then I like left NVC trainings. I left NVC spaces for a long time, but I carried the tools with me everywhere. And I was doing a lot of direct crisis response and trauma services. And then in 2017, I had a really beautiful experience of like recognizing that I had something to offer and identifying the gatekeeper in my own brain. And so the next year I started teaching, and then the programming director of what is now called the Feminist Center for Creative Work, she had like, we had done like a run, like a 10-week DNVC series. And then she was like, do you want to write a book? And I was like, okay. And like put some stuff on like a Google Doc. And then 2 weeks later, there it was. So it is a workbook on nonviolent communication, which for folks who are not familiar with that is a communication modality that really guides you into understanding your body signals. What do those body cues mean in terms of how do we put that into words of like feelings and needs? And then how do we make choices about how we want to talk to the people that we do or don't care about, or how do we want to show up in our relationships?
And can you talk a little bit about the decolonial lens? And you mentioned too that there was something that felt like a sticking point. So I'm curious about that.
Yeah. Conventional nonviolent communication operates from the lens that everybody can speak their needs into the room at any point in time. It is a beautiful concept. It is. I love the idea. I love the idea of agency that exists behind that premise. We know that it is not functionally true. That's not how life operates from so many different reasons, angles, et cetera. So the way my work works and what I mean by decolonizing nonviolent communication is that an analysis of like systems of oppression and power dynamics are included and are necessary in deciding how we show up and communicate. Also, there's no good or bad, right or wrong. There's just listening to your body. I often tell like my workshop participants, like you bringing your authentic voice into the world is the most nonviolent thing that you can do. And sometimes that will mean screaming. Sometimes that will mean yelling. Like whatever is really true that needs to be expressed, that's the thing that we're going to look for and find in order to give your body and your voice access to expression in that way.
I love that. I had a therapy session yesterday where I was talking about how liberating it is to tell the truth about what has happened to me. That previously I was told I should hide, or that I was in, there was like a fear instilled, like being honest about your truth is going to harm yourself, right? Was the message that I received. And so I love that framing of like the most important thing that you can offer is what is true.
I love that for you. And in tandem with, I'm so sorry, so fucked with that. Previous thing happened. I think something I'll tie into that is that our definition of truth can change over time. Mm-hmm. There's, right, as we change, as we grow, as we have a new definition of our authentic voice, there can sometimes be a deep disappointment and an overwhelming self-criticism of why didn't I know this earlier? Why didn't I say this sooner? What was wrong with me that I didn't show up in XYZ ways? And to has practices for grace to be like, that was true then, and this is true now, and we get to grow forward from here.
Yeah, I love that so much. It makes me curious, and this is, I know, a complicated question, but I think it's something that our listeners would be really curious about. In these continually unprecedented times that we are living through, how do you employ these principles in trying to share with family members or colleagues or friends who have differences of opinions than you do about some of the very important things happening in the world in a way that is impactful?
I think it's 2, 3, maybe 4, 5, 10 million things. One, I think about things in terms of the long game, right? Like what are the drips of water that we need to allow to flow into a conversation that will allow the rock to crack open sustainably with time. I think that we can achieve quick change through shame, right? Like shame dumping on somebody can create immediate change, immediate shutdown, immediate something. But long-term sustained transformation happens by choice and happens through relationship. So how do we want to engage with the people who matter to us, who have significantly different experiences of truth or significantly different experiences of the world? So one is just that kind of visioning of like, what kind of game do you want to play? The second is capacity. I do not ever think it is a good idea for any of us to be operating too far outside of our capacity. I think it's healthy to stretch our capacity, to learn, to grow, you know what I mean? But like this idea of being like overwhelmed and exhausted all the time, like we can't function or engage in conversations that will actually shift the needle from that perspective. Three, I think it's important to have a place to go to replenish. Like if you're going to go head to head with like a family member who has a very different point of view than you do, go head to head, like go in on that conversation and then find the place where you can have the conversation of like, fuck, that was hard, like, you know, so that you can reroute into why you're having those conversations and engaging in that way. And then the last thing, right, is that as much as possible, find ways to really, really discharge energy from the body before you have those conversations. You know what I mean? Like, I recently had a conversation with somebody and they are Zionist adjacent and like really deeply believe in the creation of the state of Israel. And I deeply believe in the sanctity of Jewish life. And I said to them, one of the things I said, because they were going, I was like, the state of Israel was founded by removing Palestinians from their homes. That's a simple truth. And you can hear it in my voice that it's like, there's no shame dumping. There's no this, there's no, it's just a fact. So find ways to practice taking some of the disappointment, the charge, the anger outside of your body so that you can just say the thing that is true and see where are the places that we can engage or meet kind of like with that as the strategy.
You know, that is the approach I take in client sessions. But when it comes to somebody like my mom's husband or my cousin, it's different. The different frequency. It's so easy when the context, not easy, sometimes it's very hard, but like when the context is professional or meant to be like has a purpose that is in, you know, insinuated through the nature of the relationship versus like, I need to have this conversation with you because of the larger cultural importance of it. And because like we sit around the same holiday table.
Yeah.
Totally different feeling in the body. You posted a post about de-escalating from defensiveness, I think is a good time to bring that into this. Mm-hmm. And then also, yeah, note like when you're in that conversation, you mentioned like getting as much of it out of the body beforehand. When you're in it, what do you do?
I don't know that I'm going to have an answer that you're going to like.
I'm not grading your answer.
I think because like exactly what you're saying, right? That when we're in those conversations, we have the nervous system reaction and then all the tools go out the window. So the strongest medicine that I can recommend is actually preventative medicine, right? So like, I think it's like, in the spaces I run, for example, we often like role play conversations before they happen. And the more you role play a conversation in like a non-charged environment, the more you can practice implementing the tool into your body and playfully finding ways that you want to be in the expression of it. I think in terms of like de-escalating, the biggest, biggest thing is taking ownership of your own bodily reactions, being able to catch yourself and be like, oh, I am not going to go there. I am going to stay here. I am going to remember what is the thing that I want to remember. Where is my capacity? I am having this conversation because I want us to be connected and because I want our people to be free collectively. So then how do I reroute in that intention before I re-engage with you? And I agree that in the spur of the moment, I don't know that I have like a strong strategy outside of the ones many people already know. Have a sip of water, go for a walk, take a break, right? All of those things are true. But I really think that preventative medicine, practicing the thing, the hard conversation you want to have, is what's going to enable you to like slow yourself down in the moment.
Yeah. And it's, I think also acknowledging like it is hard. It's a courageous thing.
Yeah.
To say, I know this is going to be hard and I'm going to do it anyway. And I think that relates back to what we were talking about of like, it's not meant necessarily to be always this joyful process, and that some of the most generative or impactful conversations or things that we create in our life are the byproduct of making a choice to do something we know is likely going to be hard.
I think that is true.
Yeah. So
Let's talk about your TED Talk.
Oh my gosh, okay.
Wait, why did you react that way?
I think because I'm really, okay, so I'll tell you, I'm really excited. When I got it, the day before the TED Talk, I went to a friend had an album release party. And so I saw so many people, right? So many loved ones that I had known over the course of 20 years, but maybe haven't been as frequent connection with. And they all assumed that I was going to be talking about decolonizing nonviolent communication in my TED Talk. They assumed I was going to be talking about my work, you know? And I was like, no, I'm going to talk about the biggest heartbreak I've ever had in my life. I'm going to talk about any chance that I have to talk about my best friend, how much I loved her, how much I will always love her, and that she broke up with me. I will be processing that for decades to come, I am sure.
Mm. It was really impactful personally because I had a best friend breakup in August of this year during the Venus retrograde in Leo. Oh. I was like, this has been smooth sailing. And then the last week it was explosion. And I was like, okay, astrology be doing what astrology does. So I was really personally impacted by what you shared about. And obviously, I'm not going to ask you to repeat the entire thing right now. But one, I just also want to commend you. You have had such an incredible public speaking ability. You held the space. I felt very held. It's that Cancer in you. I felt very held in the space. And I went with two of my best friends and we're all just the whole time crying the entire day. It was such a great day. We cried the whole time. But for people who weren't there, if you want to give them the Cliff Notes version, however that feels inspiring to you.
Yeah, I'm happy to. My best friend and I met when we were 10 years old. We became best friends when we were 16. And then when we were 36, she broke up with me. And she was very clear about that breakup. And so my TED Talk was on what friend breakups taught me about liberation and freedom. And what does it mean to choose? And what does it mean to be in lifelong love and commitment? And I will say it has... For folks who've gone through friend breakups, we know it brings up so many different emotions from shame, resentment, bitterness, whatever. Why didn't you want to fight for us? Why didn't you want to stick it out? And then how to move towards perspective and peace and celebrating what was. Yeah.
And I think that there's something I've seen this as a cultural movement in the last couple of years on social media around acknowledging that almost all of us have a relationship experience like that, where it's a best friend and you think about it for years to come all the time. I don't remember thinking about that as a universal experience. I remember the first time it happened to me when I was in high school, I lost a best friend the year we graduated, and that how defining of an experience it was, but also that it felt very that was just that. Doesn't really happen to people. There must be something wrong with me that happened to me. I must be a bad friend or I'm the victim in this situation.
Yeah.
And I think what I've learned about female friendships in particular, not to gender them, but in my own personal experience, that's a truth, is that this is a sort of a universal thing.
It is. And right? Yes, plus one, cosine. It absolutely 150% is.
Yeah. And that for people who see or hear themselves in us talking about it, the thing that I try to remember is sometimes friendships are not supposed to last. And I say this, I've had lots of other friendship breakups where it's our entire relationship was based on partying in my 20s and we really don't have anything in common. Oh, the 2016 elections happened and people fell away. That there's been different iterations of communities that I've been in that I've realized this actually isn't for me. And I'm now going to moonwalk backwards out of this space and not come back. And I used to shame myself a lot for that in my 20s there must be something wrong with me that I keep like iterating through community. And I think that there's this discovery process, and we don't necessarily do this with breakups, right? Like sometimes you have a string of relationships in your life and they're not meant to last. Mm-hmm. And this internalizing of something being wrong with us or our ability to be in connection, as opposed to a recognition that it can actually be a beautiful thing to hone in more specifically on what is for you and like where you want to invest time and energy, and that it is a painful but also unavoidable part of being a human to have some relationships that are not meant to last the entirety of your life.
Yeah. Something that I will say for me, so in terms of like cultural context, like I'm Sri Lankan Tamil, the idea that like my parents have friends that they have known since they were 5 years old and that they haven't seen, right, for like 15, 20 years, and the embraces that they have and like the ways in which families stay bonded and connected through war and across diaspora. I think that was really the cultural expectation that I was raised with, along with I'm named after the mother goddess. And I was taught growing up very clearly that we are physically of each other, that literally everybody and everything that has ever existed, will ever exist, is also within the fabric of my being. So for me, the idea of relationships truly ending was just so like, not even conceptual to me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and also tie in all the cancer stuff, right? Like, I have always tried to stay friends with my exes and just assumed that like we can hold love, you know, because all these relationships, whichever kind they are, they know a fragment of you, and there's a fragment of you that comes alive in that relationship that nobody else can kind of elicit or bring out. And I think it was a really important learning curve for me to really understand that it is important to be able to let things have a season, to let things have a transition, and to still hold it within the scope of my belief system of we are of each other. We still are, but we can be of each other in a different way.
The Cancer moon in me really bad. I don't know if this is a Cancer thing, but I've always thought that it was, is like, I get very sad about endings.
Yeah.
Like on Christmas Eve, when the sun was setting, I was like, oh, the day is ending. And my friend was like, we have the entire night now. Uh-huh. And I'm like, no, but like, there's this moment that is dying and I am like mourning the loss of the moment. And it's like, okay, but you do that every day.
Yes.
Do you relate to that?
I do.
What is that about?
I definitely can't survive. Definitely. Yeah.
But I think it's really beautiful too, of like the memories and the version of the relationship that was really great, and the photos and the person you were, that quote about, you know, to love someone is to attend 1,000 funerals of the people that they used to be. Like, yeah, to have those things. I have tattoos with people, like matching tattoos with people I'm not friends with anymore. Mm. I really love those tattoos.
Mm. Super.
What are you feeling in your body as we talk?
I think one of the things I'm noticing is I'm like, oh, remember earlier when Kara asked about the unpleasant feelings and like my initial reaction to it, and I was thinking, this is a grief that I've been seeing the quote kind of resurge, that grief is love that has nowhere to go. Mm. And I'm like, I would never make the choice to let this grief leave my body of losing my best friend. It is a grief that I am happy to hold forever. It might transmute, it might change, you know, but I am like more content to have this grief with me in some type of way than to have pretend we never existed or something like that.
I think that's very Cancerian too. Like where I remember it takes me a really long time to get over breakups. And by really long, because that's obviously subjective, I mean like longer than everybody else I've ever met.
Okay.
And I think that in processing that for me has been like, the longer I hold on to being in pain about this, the closer I am to still being in the relationship.
Oh. No comment. No comment.
I'm like, anybody here with an Aquarius moon is like, what the fuck are you guys talking about?
Get out of there.
Like, that sounds terrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it plays out in random, like very small ways in my life. Like, I will leave the tags on things in my house for months. Mm-hmm. I had them on my oven mitts for like over a year. And my friend just took the tag off my oven mitt. And I was like, why did you do that? And she's like, why is it on here? I was like, it's closer to being new. No. So I just like keep, it's like this weird sentimental expression. It's like a personality quirk. Uh-huh. Do you have personality quirks like that?
Do I have I think probably not quite like that. I eat a lot of chips and I watch a blend of like white people period pieces like Pride and Prejudice and like stuff like that. But I don't think I have those specific kind of quirks that come to mind.
Wait, what's your moon sign?
Sag.
Okay. See, I think that gives you an edge on emotional resilience.
I will also say the other pieces of my chart that are very important to me, I have a Capricorn rising and I have a Venus Virgo, and those are very, very present.
How do you relate to your Venus in Virgo?
You know, it took me a long time to understand this, but when rupture occurs, my initial response is that the repair must be perfect. It must be razor's edge precise. I have tremendous capacity for however much time it takes. But that's like my shadow side reaction, is that it must be exactly perfect. And I remember when I connected those dots, I was like, oh, I understand. Mm-hmm. I can show up differently in my relationships now. I can create more grace. I can stop being so rigid about the things that, yeah, maybe they matter and they do matter in some ways, but also they can be done differently.
Yeah. And what even is perfect as somebody with Venus also in Virgo?
Oh, how does yours show up? What is yours like?
Well, that's why I asked you, because I love talking about astrology on this podcast. I sort of struggle with her because I relate to her as being in her fall. And she's super particular. Like, as a polyamorous person, I'm also demisexual, and I'm like, how often do you floss your teeth? What does the underside of your nails look like? Like, I'm just very particular about hygiene and like feeling like people are infecting me energetically. And I think that it is sometimes difficult to be like sex positive and free when I feel very like particular and bogged down. I have like a deep capacity for love, and like I think the Venus in Virgo does lots of like cute, fun acts of service that are very particular to how I like to love, that like bring a lot of joy to people in my life. Mm-hmm. And then there's this like rigidity that feels personally restrictive in my own experience of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you resonate with that.
I am not in those ways, but in so many of the Virgos that I love and have loved, that resonates and that tracks.
I wanted to talk a little bit about somatic healing as it relates to what we feel in our body when looking at wealth, when looking at friendship, when looking at healing, and what in your work you've noticed about your clients, and you know, just giving people maybe tools or like helpful tips for being in relationship with those parts of themselves as they're healing.
Yeah. It's funny. I was talking with my coach today. So I am working on making, I want to make a quiz, you know, that relates to like healing your money trauma. And my coach was asking me a bunch of these questions about who my clients are. And I was like, no, those are not my people. Like, my people are the people who think that money is evil. My people are the people who think that money will make them turn you into a bad person. Money, you know, those are my people. And the reasons why we are so afraid of wealth and material well-being is because we tend to come from communities that have been historically impacted. And so the idea of turning into the oppressor is terrifying, or betraying the communities that we come from. And I think that, and this is, I think, one of the reasons that I love family constellation work, it also really taught me in like the most grounded woo-woo way that the universe really wants us to win. The universe wants good things for us. I think some pieces, some sort of timely and relevant pieces that I will share. I've had the gift of serving friends and clients who are Palestinian. In the very first money constellation I did, the person who was receiving the constellation, the energy was like, how is it okay for me to receive when my people are losing everything that we have? And the way money showed up in the constellation was so tremendously beautiful. And money arrived and was like, I want to be with you, but not if it will disturb your peace. And similarly, last year, I facilitated a piece for a loved one. And we brought a representative into the constellation for Palestine. And the energy and essence of just deep beauty, richness, safety, like, I want you to have everything, was wild. It was, and it is, I think for me, has been incredibly nourishing to remember and lean into during these times. But so in terms of like somatic work and whatever it is that you're going through, whether it's like business related, navigating things related to how you structure your business and your concepts of wealth and equity, or like your personal relationships and navigating how you choose or break certain patterns, it's really the invitation to remember that the universe wants us to be well, and where can we find that energy in our bodies? And how do we water those seeds and anchor more deeply into that as a reality? Something that I'll even offer right now as like a tangible practice, right, for listeners, is to take a moment and pause and notice, is your body constricting more in this moment? Does it feel tighter? Does it feel more exhausted? Does it feel, you know, clenched up? Or is there softness? Is there expansion? Is there grounding? And maybe there's a feeling of like many of those things, that if you can find like the glimmer of one of those things that feels good, I would invite you to kind of like put your hand on that body part and A, breathe into it more deeply, and B, just to say, thank you, I see you, right? Like the parts of our spirit and our bodies that that know we're meant to be here to hold each other deeply, they want to be celebrated and seen, right? The more we remember we're here to do good things, the easier it is to bring good things into the world.
Thank you for the reminder that the universe wants good things for us. I think a lot of people are struggling in this particular moment, myself included, to hold that as a truth in the midst of so much suffering.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about my own relationship to, I have a very spiritual, I don't think I've talked about this on the podcast. I have a very spiritual relationship with my grandfather. He died when I was 4. He survived the Holocaust and he immigrated from Hungary during the communist revolution and like started a business in New York and was like very successful. And in my early 20s, I received a pretty undeniable visit from him in a way that made me believe in God. Mm. I moved from Florida back to New York City. I've never shared this publicly before, I don't think. I moved from Florida back to New York City, and he had left me a little bit of money when he died. I was a recent college graduate with no job and no job history. And if anybody has ever tried to get real estate, like to try to get a lease in New York without that, they said you need to pay 5 months up front. And I had to pay like this enormous broker fee. So I used the money that he had left me to pay for my first apartment in New York. And the super of that apartment building was Hungarian. And he was like, oh, Gara Kovács, the Hungarian girl. And he was very like, as soon as he knew that I was Hungarian, he like anything that was broken, he fixed. Like I was very well taken care of. Anyway, about 7 months later, my mom came to visit for the first time. And she walked into the lobby and she saw the super's wife. And she said, Ida? And Ida looked at my mom and she said, Michelle. And I'm standing there and I'm like, what the actual fuck is going on? She was my grandfather's housekeeper.
Whoa.
Yeah. And she was my nanny when I was a baby. And she had baby photos of me in her apartment. And my mom had been to their wedding.
Wow.
And I was agnostic. And that happened. And I remember, I felt, I'm like, as I'm telling you, I'm getting emotional, but I felt his spirit hold me. And I was like, oh, I believe in God now.
It feels very nice for my body to hear that. It feels like a celebration story.
Yeah. It's been a minute since I shared it. Maybe I'll schedule this one to come out on his birthday because I celebrate every year. How might you advise people to connect to their ancestry and the knowledge that their families want good things for them?
Yeah. I think the simplest strategy is to connect with literally nature, just sit outside, touch grass, touch a tree, notice what's present in your body, and then just ask what information wants to come forward and notice what changes in your body and trust it. Maybe nothing happens, maybe something happens, but just listen. I think that if you have access to your bio family and relationships with families are deeply complicated. When I facilitate my work, you don't have to know your biological family. We don't ever have to reference them or bring them in if that is not resonant for your spirit of who your family is. Family is something you get to define. I think if you have access to your bio family, I would say ask questions. And something I often get people to ask is ask a question about your literal birth, the way you came into the world, because there is often information stored within there about how the birth experience shaped, textured, et cetera, your nervous system. And it can feel very relieving to connect some of those dots.
I love that. And if people want to get in touch with you, learn more about your work, I don't know if you know when the TEDx recordings will be up, but we'll link that in the show notes if it's out by then. Where would you send them?
Come to my website or to my Instagram. Both are very simple. My website is my name, meenachi.com. Instagram is whip.meenachi. The TEDx, I think, will be out this month.
Amazing. So yeah. We'll be able to link them. Maybe I'll send a newsletter with a roundup of them because they were so great and I appreciated them so much. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was really lovely.
Yes. This is my favorite part of my job is doing podcast recordings with guests. I just get to talk to cool people. Mm-hmm. And to hear the next cool person, hit the subscribe button. And we will see you next week on Business Witch.